My name is Sean Kantrowitz, and you are listening to the Questions Hip Hop Podcast. We are back at it this week with the latest installment in our Making Illmatic series. What is Making Illmatic, you might be asking yourself? Well, I'm going to tell you. It's a thought exercise where my co-host Midas the Beast and I, along with a third special guest, examine an album and attempt to trim it down to 10 songs to see if doing so improves the album or hurts the album. This week's episode is a tough one, a real tough one. Like, there have been quite a few guests on the show who suggested doing this album in the past, and I denied it a couple times. It didn't always feel like the right time, and honestly, it's mostly because I know that this album is held in such high regard already. We never want to come across as though we are disrespecting the work of the artists who we talk about on this show. That is far from the case. We poke and examine and deep dive these songs and these albums because we love this shit so much. But yeah, a lot of people wanted to do this album, and we didn't do it for a while. But my guy, my cousin, my Questions co-founder and former Making Illmatic guest Steve Wonder, he stepped in the arena, as it were, and he was like, we should do De La Soul's Stakes Is High. And when Steve came to me with a suggestion, I had to say yes. We're sort of in a De La Soul renaissance these days. The music is on streaming platforms now for the first time ever. The Plugs are celebrating the 35th anniversary of their debut album, 3 Feet High and Rising. And Pos and Maceo are out in the world right now. They launched a radio show on Apple Music called AOI Radio that I'm really interested in checking out. It seems like they've had some dope guests so far. I have some other De La related news that I will share at a certain point, but I can't talk about it here just yet. But I will be talking about it on the Patreon. And that is what we call an amazing segue to tell you that if you like the Questions Hip Hop Podcast and you want to support the show, you should join the Patreon. $5 a month. It doesn't just help, you know, me keep this thing go afloat. It also gets you exclusive access to bonus content from the episodes, early access, playlists, music, videos, articles, and more. Just last week, I shared a bonus installment of Can't Knock the Shuffle with RJD2. 10 songs that predated the episode taping that we brought back from the archives last week. I also shared a pretty in-depth piece that I wrote years ago about the rapper Diverse. If you know, you know how dope he is and how mysterious his story has been. Super deep stuff. Shout out to the Patreon members, and if you want to join, hit the link in the episode notes or go to patreon.com/thequestionshiphop. While we're doing shout outs, I want to give a big shout out to Robert Van Vranken, who has joined the team and is helping to steer this podcast ship with the edits. Robert has lent his talents to some of my other favorite hip hop pods, like Merce's excellent Best Rapper in LA podcast, the classic godfather of really all rap nerd podcasts, The Cypher with Sean Cetera. And he also worked on Stony Island's very own What Had Happened Was, the last season with Questlove. So big shout out to Mr. Van Vranken. Okay, are you ready to do this? Stakes Is High, the fourth De La album. The album that definitely marked a new chapter. It changed the trajectory for the group. Some say it's their best. Some say it's in their top three. Some feel like it can't hold a candle to the earlier works, but no one can say that it is only 10 songs long, and when we are done with this episode, we will be able to say that. So we're about to do just that. This is a Making Illmatic episode of the Questions Hip Hop Podcast with special guest DJ Steve Wonder, and we are taking on De La Soul's Stakes Is High.
Who did it first? Who rapping there? That remix, and what happened when? That's the question.
And let me ask you a question.
And if you ain't know what needs, then my guy's knowing what you need. Some answers to the questions.
Back at it once again. It's the questions making Illmatic.
Once again, Long Island.
Oh, man. Already Sorry. Coming in hot. I love it. Let's just get right into it. I'm Sean Kantrowitz. I'm joined, as I always am on these Making Illmatic excursions, by my man, Midas the Beast. Midas, how you doing?
I was waiting for you to be like, that's the noise. Nah, I'm good, man. I'm out here.
It's a family affair, not just literally, but figuratively. We got Steve Wonder, my cousin, my questions co-creator. He was on this show like a year ago. We did the Far Side album, and he's back again. Steve Wonder.
What up, y'all? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome back, brother.
I think I hit you up about this album like last month. I was listening to it, like vibing off of it, because it's on streaming now. So I was like, we should do one on this. This just feels right, you know? So I'm glad we're here.
This was a good choice because my relationship with this record is like, it came out during a time when I was listening to a lot of other shit. And as I've mentioned before, I missed the boat on De La and Tribe in my formative years. So I had to go back. But like, this was one that like, I always had the relationship with De La and Tribe where it was like, I know that their shit is fire. And I know that this shit is essential and all of that, but it was like, but I'm just not listening. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know it, like it is. And if somebody would have talked to me about it, I'd be like, yeah, they're dope. Like, I know the singles and shit, but never dope. And also my ears weren't tuned to a certain, I think that's an important thing to talk about when we talk about like what music people like personally, is like your ears also have to be tuned to certain sounds a little bit. Like for Sean, for instance, when I used to talk to you a lot about, like, your ears weren't tuned to Wu-Tang sonics.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And what that sound was. And there was a lot of the sound that my ears weren't tuned to. With that being said, I do remember running through the record because there was a couple joints on here from back in the day that were my shit, but I haven't heard the record in 100 years. Like, so Steve, like, with the logic of duh, because it hasn't been on streaming and I wasn't fucking trying to find it any kind of way. Man, this shit right here, nigga. Woo!
I've been extremely stressed since Steve first suggested the idea that we do this album. I was like, ooh, okay, yeah, I like that. I texted him last night. You know, we weren't revealing our picks to each other, but I was definitely feeling stressed out, like, damn. Cutting this down to 10, it kind of feels dangerous to me. It feels sacrilegious to me. But I think there's it's worth bringing up that I think there are many fans of De La Soul, one of the greatest groups in hip hop. And I think that this record can mean different things to you depending basically on how old you are or what your listening experience is to the group. Because this was their fourth album. It came out July 2nd, 1996 on Tommy Boy Records. And I've encountered in my internet, you know, life and in my real life, IRL life, where for some people, they hold this as, this is one of the best De La Soul albums. I know people who say this is the best De La Soul album. I know people who will sort of like politely smile and laugh and be like, that's cute, but come on, it's obviously the first album or the second album. And for me, I probably hold this. I think there was a time that this was my favorite De La album. I think in my current state, I got to go with the more classic material. But Steve, I'm curious to you. You're a few years older than I am, and I know that you were listening to these records earlier than I was. What was your relationship with Stakes is High and De La overall?
Well, I'm a De La Soul is Dead guy. Like, that is my record. I actually remember having 3 Feet on tape. And being so, I mean, what was it, 89? So I think I was probably 10 years old, but just being so fascinated with the artwork. They had all their cartoons in. It was so like mesmerizing to a young like kid learning about music. And, you know, the first album is so like, I want to say comical almost. You know what I mean? Like the skits. It was really Prince Paul's like coming out party of like his quirky personality. You know, so I was a big fan of the first album, but De La Soul is Dead just like won me over like crazy. So this album, you know, so this is the fourth album. Then you had Blue Mind State, which was kind of their jazzier, more soulful vibe. And you know what I find fascinating about this album is it comes in 96, which is like the genesis of the indie era. to me, you know, like 97 was like Fat Beats was really starting to like plant its foot in hip hop. And this album to me kind of leaned more into that sound, as where their earlier productions were a little more illustrious. I think like Balloon Mind State was a little more, a lot more musicality with the Maceo solos. And this one was like more boom bap to me of all their albums. You know what I mean? So, but I still hold it high. You know, it might be my second favorite De La.
Yeah, I mean, we got to talk about the context of this too. This comes out in 1996. This record came out on the same day as Nas's It Was Written. And that has always rung true in my head to really represent a demarcation in the sound and the evolution of what was happening in hip hop. You had, and I know that this is like can be a controversial topic, but Nas has this very jazzy influenced, this sort of, I guess you could say it was underground leaning first album. He's working with Large Professor and Pete Rock. And as we know from the lore, you know, Illmatic did not receive the love that he had hoped that it would commercially and critically at the Source Awards. And it is well reported that Nas sort of looked at the love and the accolades that Biggie was getting. And that, at least in part, challenged him to move in a different direction for It Was Written, where it was a little bit more commercial leaning in terms of like what was happening at the time. The soundscape changed a little bit. And that was sort of one, we saw the roads fork there in mainstream, quote unquote, 90s hip hop. And again, I think to your point, Steve, Stakes Is High was definitely De La's response to what was happening in the moment of what was popping in New York, what was popping in the commercial scene, and they very much leaned into a new persona. They reinvented themselves again to be a little less quirky, a little less comical. But this was them kind of embracing a lot of the, I guess, for lack of a better term, you could say bitterness or distaste for what was happening in music. And they basically made a whole album about it. If this is maybe kind of a concept album of like De La Soul cosplaying or literally embracing the role of backpackers, like maybe.
Yeah, I mean, some of the most memorable lines, like one of them is to me, I got some question about your life if you're so ready to die, which is a straight, you know, not a shot at Biggie, but you know, like that's that he's literally saying it there. It's there's no room for interpretation. And of course, the sick of bitches shaking asses, sick of talking about blunt, sick for Versace glasses. I mean, that totally reminds me of the What We Do video. It was kind of like, it was, you know, this is kind of like 96 is probably Soulquarians are starting to form and all these things are happening where, yeah, they're the divide is happening wider of who's in it for sales and who's in it for the sound and the foundation of what hip hop's based on, I guess.
Yeah. So three singles released from this album. We had the title track, Stakes Is High, It's So Easy, and Four More. It peaked at number 13 on the Billboard 200 charts. The critical reception, kind of mixed reviews, I would say. I couldn't find a source review, but Village Voice gave it a B+, Entertainment Weekly gave it a B, Spin gave it a 6 out of 10, Rolling Stone gave it 2 out of 5 at the time, and then later they revised it to be 4 out of 5. So I understand sonically, on a pure sonic level, and this was before they gave all the albums another mix job before they put them back on streaming, for me, this was the first De La album that kind of like knocked, or as the kids might say, slapped. You know, a lot of those earlier records, particularly, I'm thinking of 3 Feet High and De La Soul Is Dead, you had to really crank the volume to like make it sound competitive to the other sounds of albums that had come out. It's similar to like the first Wu-Tang album, you know, like it's.
And on that note, this is the first album without Prince Paul production.
Got to talk about that too. And he started the album with them. They started working on it a little bit and they just kind of realized, I think Paul was trying to, hey, let's do some more like kind of quirky, weird shit and like skits. And they couldn't really see eye to eye on it. And this was the first time that they parted ways with him, right?
By 96, the landscape of hip hop was so, you know what I'm saying? Like it wasn't, being funny was kind of going the way of like, nah, we need to be more serious about this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, if you think the theme of this record, like the whole, like, you know, kind of theme that it carries is about some real hip hop shit. You know what I'm saying? And just the value of real hip hop and everything like that. And I think even though all of that is part of real hip hop, you know what I'm saying? It just was super serious at this point.
I don't want to blow up the spot, but somebody who would know told me very recently that when Paul was involved, that he said that he wanted the album cover to be a cow smoking a joint. Like, stakes is high. And again, that was another sort of sign of the shift in attitudes where the plugs, the De La guys, were like, nah.
Which is funny because he had already done his Gravediggers stuff, which was more serious, but I could also see that as being kind of like a pet project and kind of like a personality of his and not necessarily his thing per se. But yeah, the beats bang on this album. The beats, I mean, no knock on the raps, but the beats are a lot of the driving force of this album to me. Like,
so to that point, right? Because I'm always I feel like I always come from, you know, I look at these things a little bit differently because, you know, part of what I was attracted to as a kid coming up in hip hop was raps over beats. And the older I got, the more it became beats over raps. It kind of took a 180. You know, I came up in a lyrical mindset, and De La was rappers. You know, to me, like, they were rappers, but they weren't like lyrical rappers to me. You know what I'm saying? So like, I liked super wordsmith guys, and I didn't see, this is part of like my thing back then, is I didn't see, oh, if you're not doing metaphysics, you're just like a cool guy rapper. You know what I mean? And some of the stuff that they were doing that is super technical, that is super, you know, super MC shit kind of flew over my head back then. But what's crazy about this record is that the beats on this album are crazy all the way through, like pretty much all the way through. Like, this is one of the more well-produced records, you could say almost ever. This is a ridiculous record production-wise. With that being said, I feel like, and we'll get into it, but I feel like the latter half of the record is not as strong as the beginning of the record to me. And the latter half of the record, there's a lot of the same kind of production I would hear on any like Slum Village type of universe. Like, I feel like the influence of like that Soulquarian thing, not that it was, the Soulquarian thing really hadn't hit yet, but like that, where everybody was like, wait a minute, have you heard this guy named JD? He's amazing. Like that thing had started to happen, it feels like, because a lot of those beats sound like that to me. It's something that I always remember about this record.
There is some sameness that you can attribute to some of these songs. The other thing that I always think is funny is that in celebrating the legacy of De La Soul and in celebrating the legacy of JD, J Dilla, this is always the record like, yeah, and this is when they linked up with JD and like Dilla was lacing them with all those beats. And he did one song.
He does one joint.
Yeah.
But to be fair, there's at least four that sound like he could have did them.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. But, yeah. Absolutely. And I don't remember, or I don't know when in the process they actually linked with him and made the title track. And if that was like one of the first songs or was it at the very end? You know, I always think it's interesting when you name an album after a song, whereas like, so did you make this great song? And then you're like, all right, this is the flag. We have to build an album around this. And we believe so much that we're going to name it this, you know?
I feel like it always has to be that you did the song first. Like, in most cases.
But do you think that they did the song early, or do you think that they recorded 10 songs and then did Stakes Is High and they were like, this is the one?
I feel like it came later. I feel like it was a crunch time thing. For some reason, I feel like the most magical stuff happens, like, in the last minute. They're just like, we needed one more song. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I've heard a lot of people talk about that, and it's like, that's the song that came out. But I could be wrong. But is this also their first work with Dilla? This is the first time?
This is the first. Yeah.
Okay.
In this case, though, they probably did have the title because there's a running theme and it fits the title. So I could totally see a scenario where you're like, Yeah, we're going to call it, this is what hip hop is feeling like right now. This is what we got to bring back to the game. We go call it The Stakes Is High. And then you do the track to commemorate that. You know what I mean? I can see that too.
If I had a little bit more time, I would run back to my bookshelf. I'm almost positive that the answer to the question of when the song happened is in Dan Charnas's Dilla Time book, but I didn't check before, so you're just going to have to pause and check for yourself.
You have to look that shit up.
And back to the subject of beats, I had to choose some of these that the ones I got rid of, it was just like, which beat did I like more? You know,
that's really what
they're
it was
both,
for me too.
They're both dope songs, but I'm like, I just like this beat more, you know, like... Some they're just so on Steve, the same level. So
to that point though, and that this brings up a good thought when looking at just the concept of making Illmatic and how we fuck with these records. Like Paz, it may like these guys, they do what they do on every record. There's no records where there's bad raps. The raps are good on every record. You know, the hooks are pretty good throughout the record. Like the songs are pretty good. So, and that's, it makes it so that the main differentiator between the songs is how much do you like the beat or do you not like the beat? Because you could theoretically put any of the raps over a different beat and like it way better. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of one of those things where, unfortunately, and coming from an MC perspective, but unfortunately the raps kind of don't matter in the sense that the same raps on a different beat change the whole way you look at the song. Cause I feel you on that concept of like, when I was re-listening to the record, I'm like, yeah, as I make my cuts and look at this, it's really about the beats, you know, and which, what would you want to hear through 10 tracks production wise? Because they're going to do what they don't do anything like way crazy rhyme wise where you're like, yo, I need that rap.
The only thing I will say is that this album also marked a shift in them going from like De La Soul songs were always a little indecipherable. They were like, so, oh, we got a dog in the frame. We got Blanky in the house. No, like De La Soul songs were always like kind of quirky and indecipherable. And you could tell there were a lot of like in-jokes and references. But this album, while consistent across the board, for me, this was the record where like, oh, they're actually like, he says every line that I write should be a hip hop quotable, right? And like that song, that I think the acapella of Paz on Stakes Is High is tied with Prodigy from Shook Ones as most sampled line that has been used in other hip hop songs. They definitely stepped it up as like, hey, we're not just trying to make interesting, oh, like that's clever little like, you know, art raps or whatever. This was the album where I think that they did step up the emceeing. But to your point, it's not like they just did it on one song. They were doing it on every song.
That's kind of the point. I thought the MCing is phenomenal on this record. It's just that there's no, like, to be honest, like, especially the cadences, the flows, like, they just go from record to record to record. So it's not like a group record where you get, like, all right, Method Man goes crazy on track two.
Right.
And then, you know, on track six, Inspector Deck goes crazy. It's like, nah, everybody just kind of goes, it's a through line all the way through. It's a high through line, but it's a through line, you know what I mean? So it ends up being about the beats to me. Like it ends up leaning more into the production.
Yeah. So 5 mic scale, this is what we do in its current state, in its current form. Where do we rank this album? Steve.
De La Soul Is Dead is a 5 mic album. This is a 4 mic to me. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going with 4.5. I definitely don't think that this is a perfect album, but for me, it's hard for me to point out anything that I don't... There's nothing bad about this album to me.
There's a couple... I had 2 songs that I was easily got rid of, to me. I'd say one. So we'll talk about that later, but, you know, I was like, hey, I could have done without that, you know, but...
And the album is sequenced really well.
Yeah.
So like this isn't one of those albums that you want to like as we redo it that you're like, ah, but this the 9th song should have been the 2nd song because it would have like even when you cut songs, they probably sit right where they need to sit in the sequences. So I would probably lean closer to the 4.5 world than the 4 world, but I mean, anywhere right in between there is the way, but I'd probably lean closer to the 4.5. I think, like our vaunted pun album, that this is going to be something that when we get it to 10, it's like, this shit is perfect, fam.
Yeah.
A lot of my cutting had to do with vibe too, because we talk about the beats, and they a lot of these beats just feel so amazing, and that was a lot of my like I have to keep the energy of the feel, you know, and if a track or beat came on, I was like, it doesn't have that same feel as the other ones. I'm like, I want to keep the consistency. I think that's kind of how we did the Lab Cabin album too. It was just like. So that was part of my like decision making, but this is going to be fun. I think we're going to have different opinions. I think I'm going to surprise you on what I cut and stuff. So
the DJ keeps the vibe. We know this, we've seen this. So it's the 3-man vote. We're going to go through all of the songs. It takes 2 to keep or 2 to cut. And if we get to the end of this album and we have more than 10, we will do a lightning round where we eliminate. This album is mostly produced by De La Soul, so something to keep in mind. We're going to hop into the first song produced by them. The song is called Intro.
When I
first heard
Criminal Minded,
I was in.
Damn, where was I?
Seventh grade.
Battling this other MC.
Drinking a 40 down Low East Side one day.
I have no idea where.
I was on my way to a family reunion in a car on the Long Island Expressway in a friend.
Roosevelt Projects.
I was outside of church when I was really little and I was doing a lot with this girl. I mean, I could have been anywhere.
Right, literally was on the radio.
So long ago.
So, Merce, what's up? This mansion, man. I want you to peep that out. Yo, kid, I was at this party, this hype party, when I heard KRS come to Miami Beach. I'll call you back. Peace.
Channeling. In sing, so my what brings that testament? The cover 12 inches of funk flip, like as if I was the Delic himself, specializing in cleansing like the hits of elephants, dub hits, bubbles out the park. Man, don't even try to talk bleach, I'm too dark and major more soul than James Escapism. De La Soul is here to stay like racism. Catch it knowing I'ma put the pillow off the bed as I lurk upon your thoughts while phones on your head, riff or tech pro. Flex suit, running you the link, scout weather, pouring rain out of duck survival.
So. Trademark Midas saying, fuck is we talking about? Let me tell you, the fuck are we talking about? That shit right there? Hey, hip-hop world, this is how the fuck you do an intro to your album. This is what you do. You come out the gate, you could do your little skit thing, whatever. It's non-invasive. I don't feel like it needs to be separated from the track at all. And when the track comes in, it's like, yeah, motherfucker, we out here. Yeah, this joint's crazy, bro. Super key.
Yeah, I'm keeping it too. It just sets the tone for the lyricism, you know, like it's actually one of the rawer tracks. A lot of them are way more musical. This is just like bare bones, but this is their genius of sequencing. And I also couldn't cut the intro, the one I first heard, Criminal Minded. That can't be cut. And that's also really memorable. So yeah, I was like, I can't get rid of how this album starts. So I'm with you.
Guys, get it the fuck out of here. No, just kidding. This is
What?
It's super raw and also like kind of unprecedented, like hasn't been done before or since. What group opens up their album singing the praise of a different group, a different artist that they're not even really affiliated with other than the fact that they kind of come from the same era? Like, that's just so fucking cool.
And it's their whole point of the whole album is that we're about the music, we're about hip hop, we're about the culture, we're about everything. And we're going to do that by just saying, like, showing you that all these other people are too about, you know what I mean? It's just like they said it without saying it, you know?
Yeah. There's a world where I would almost imagine cutting this only for the reason that it's not, it doesn't really feel like a song. It really does feel like an intro, but it's such a fucking raw intro that, again, how could you with a straight face be like, yeah, this can't go on the album? It totally sets the tone.
Yeah. And then going back, that raw factor, man, this shit, you talk about some shit that sound like, I mean, this sound like a Wu-Tang song. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a loop. It don't get no more hip hop than that. It's just a loop. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny because so much of this album is, in Steve's words, lush, which I agree with. It's got such a lush sound. This is raw. And it's just the raw hip hop ass, like, It's funny when people talk about that word backpack, but what people put in the category of backpack to me leaves the science of, to me, when you talk about backpack, you're talking about rhyming and ciphers. You're talking about rhyme, and that's not Lush production. That's something looping that you could, that everybody can rap on. You know what I'm saying? Like, so this to me, that's backpack rap right there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Let's let this break run. Let's rhyme on it. You know what I'm saying? Like that shit is crazy.
Do you think it's fair to say that the fourth De La Soul album is a post Wu-Tang album? Do you think that like the sound and the scope of what the Wu-Tang had done to the sound of New York hip hop imprinted and sort of helped shape the change in direction on Stakes Is High?
I think similar to how you would say that people looked, a lot of rappers, there was a divide in a, what are we going to do now when N.W.A. came out? You know, when N.W.A. came out, there was a, all right, so what the fuck are we going to do? Because, you know, everything that was before has to look and feel and smell a little bit different now that, that these guys are, or, and, or when you hear, when you heard The Chronic, you're like, okay, all right, now what are we going to do? You know what I mean? I think Wu-Tang was such a force as far as how many records drop. I mean, Jesus, by 96, 5 records is out. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a force with so much music, with such a distinctive way and sound to it. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody had to smell it a little bit and say, what are we going to do? You know?
Right.
You don't want to be labeled as old school while all this stuff is happening.
And De La definitely successfully dodged that. Like, De La never got looped into the, oh, the old school. Oh, their first album came out in 89. Isn't that cute? And it's 96. A lot of their peers couldn't do that. Even look at, like, you know, groups like Run DMC, who obviously predated them, like...
No facts.
It was when they tried to make the pivot into like, oh, we're a 90s group, it didn't take the way that De La was able to do it.
I wonder, too, if that had to do with some of the, you know, like a lot of those, either it was pre, like, 88. I think pre-88 makes a difference. But then I also would say, if you put out like a younger artist, like you were grooming a younger artist, it just kind of made you look old. Because, like, when I thought about EPMD, I always was like, well, they're the older guys because there's Redman and Keith Murray. That's the young blood. You know what I'm saying? And these are the OGs type of thing. And De La didn't really have the young blood. It was just De La. You know what I'm saying? And they were active, too, which I think makes a difference.
I mean, De La in 89 and Tribe in 90 were so ahead of their time. You knew that they had a span to give us more incredible music. Like they sounded like nothing. You know what I mean? It was just like it's like Welcome to Our World, you know, like Buddy, when it was like De La, Jungle Brothers, Tribe, Latifah. You're just like, this is a whole rap universe and it's about to be here. It's not going anywhere for sure. So
it's not like they came along. It's like, finally, somebody has perfected the sound of 80s rap. Like they distilled it. It's like, no, this is some new shit and things are going to be different. All right, we're going to move on to track two then. It is Supa MCs. I'm on the set like the fix, so let your cameras flash. A splash bigger than whales to make the monsters match. Sweet Pinocchio's theory when shit be looking weary. I need rest, but I boogie for now. I'm on some mess like the best mics would sponsor me. Living days like dreams and specializing in the art that pays. I'll be enlisted for life. So check my ID number. MCs be needing dough while I'm
Red Light Wonder, yes.
Is that a Steve Wonder origin line?
Bread like Wonder. It's a good one. I've never used it.
I mean, this song could easily be the first song on the album as well. It's, again, sort of a mission statement. It's an obvious keep for me. This is great. I love the hook. The rapping is great. I don't have a lot to add, but this definitely leans a little bit more into the head noddy, underground, you know, cypher beat type thing. I have always loved this track.
It's a keeper for me, and it also sets a precedent of what a lot of the album will sound like. Bubbly, good loops, good vibes. Like, a lot of these beats, like he was saying, like I was listening to, like, the Dilla reference. Like, a lot of these beats are just loops that I would play for an hour, dude. I'll, you know what I mean? Like, give me the instrumental, and I'll just, like, clean my whole house listening to these beats. They're so good. And I love the hooks, great. I love the super, you know? Like, I love any, like... additions of old rap songs. All their lyrics are you know, referencing old rap songs. And I love any song talking about how people shouldn't rap because they're not good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. All things Steve just said, I agree with. And, you know, again, like the beats on this album, and this is the first one that it does it, like the beat is chunky. You know, it sound like it got chunk to it, some weight to it. You know what I'm saying? So that's my take for a bunch of these records. But this shit's crazy. The hook is super fun, dope. And yeah, to Sean's point, it is the mission statement. You know, I always say that the second song should be the one that lets people know that you really can rap. You know what I'm saying? Like the first song is kind of like the we hear. And the second song is the but we can rap too type of energy. They kind of do it in reverse. But it works, you know what I'm saying? It works. And then, of course, they call it Super MC, so it really works. But yeah, nah, this shit is a super keep.
A Super M keep, would you say?
Super M keep.
All right, we're going to move on to the third song featuring Common. The song is called The Business. Do you want to be an MC? Or do you want to serve? Do you want to be dope? Or do you want to deal it? Fabricated acrylic, I feel it. I'm the style molester. I do a show, get extra peas like the lost professor. In fact, I get my hoes in Tessa. Peep game like a refa. Re-install controller, my duster. Knee in the bester. 3 out of 5. Whip anybody ass in NBA live rappers. Take a dive like Greg Louganis with his... I'd rather be at Bay Bay's alley than at the Click Brigaders. Not a hater of the players. I'm more like a coach or an owner. I used to love her, but now I bone her. At one point in rhyme, I thought I lost my record. So that was a big 12-inch. I got this at Fat Beats. This was a big 12-inch for DJs to do doubles with the instrumental and fuck around. I know this was a big instrumental for people to freestyle on the Wake Up Show. And you know what I mean? Like, this is a keeper to me. This is just like, this is classic. Every verse on this song is just 5 mic, you know, like, come on, dude, what are we doing here? Like he said, like,
so reformed controversial take on this song.
Ooh, okay.
When I was 15 or whatever age I was, I liked raw shit. And this was so anti-raw, you know? But to Steve's point, this was the joint that was being freestyled over on all the radio shows. And it, like, this beat was everywhere. You know what I'm saying? But for me at the time, it was super like, this is that fucking head rap shit, you know, like, and of course it features Common, who was the head rap headmaster, you know what I'm saying? in my eyes. But that was my take back then, man. Can I get some more of this today? Like, that'd be great. You know, back then I was like, but this is definitely my shit. So it was great. I love any record that everybody like that feels loose in its execution a little bit. So like you kind of hear people behind each other. It kind of sounds like a cipher. You know what I'm saying? And that's always some shit that I got a lot of love for. So it's a keep for me too.
It's honestly maybe my favorite Common guest verse in his entire catalog.
Wait, hold on.
Over respiration?
That's what I was going, the fuck?
Respiration is an all-time great, but honestly, I think like the narrative and the overall writing and the depth of what the verse is about on Respiration is better. I think pattern and style-wise, he does some really fucking like... It's going to make you like cheese a little bit when you hear like what he's doing on this and like how he like stretches the bar out and like, you know, into the next one. And I said it. I think that this is better than the Respiration verse. Like
fine take.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as a performance emceeing wise, not necessarily as a writing wise. You know what I mean? Yeah. This song is great. I love the loose feel. I love a song where like the hook also alternates the order in which they're all rapping. They're playing with it. Confessional moment, I was unaware until this album got re-released last year and put on streaming. I did not know that was a Craig Mack sample at the beginning of the track. It says, and bass up the track a little bit.
Because I want to hear that. Boom.
I wasn't really up on that Craig Mack song or like that era.
That's something I found out later too. So yeah, I think a lot of people didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because that was just from two years before, you know, it was just like,
right. Yeah. And it didn't sound like a sample. It sounded like an ad lib that like they would have said before the track came out. So
I also never got into his album, Craig Mack, for some reason. It just like never like crossed my radar.
Somebody needs to bring Craig Mack to make an Illmatic. We'll do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an unpopular take to say I never got really into the album of Craig Mack, an artist who is like pretty much across the board, like we know and love one to two songs of his.
That's right. That's the only two I know.
This beat is so simple, but also it's like it is a template for underground rap for the near future. It's gonna be a cool head nod beat and go dun dun dun. That's it. You know what I mean? And I think that goes to what you're saying with Wu-Tang is I think RZA, although his shit was actually really complex, like it was so bare-boned and stripped down that other people realized that they could do the same thing and just, all right, we just need that, you know, it's like it's almost like unbelievable, like dun, 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 you know what I mean? Like very
choppy.
But still, it's like right in that moment. And this reminds me of all these singles I remember getting, It's So Easy, at Fat Beats. Like this was like the boom of indie rap, you know, like, and they fit in that, you know, but they were still in a major. Oh, I was going to make this point earlier that like, knowing what we know now of all their issues with Tommy Boy, we see why their energy shifted in this kind of, even though it's like anti like whack rap, I think, you know, like the jadedness had begun and it wasn't the flowers anymore. It wasn't the jazz solos, you know what I mean? It was just like beats and rap and stuff. So, you know, that's probably a little back to why, you know, they didn't go the Prince Paul funny route, you know?
Right. This also sort of set the template for many, many other records in 12 inches that would probably be circulated through Fat Beats and making songs dedicated to the nameless, faceless, whack MCs. And the song, a whole song conceit just being like, you don't rap well, and we're going to tell you why you're whack.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've made a rap career off of this song, if that's the case. So, yeah.
I realized in saying it that, like, I want to say, obviously it existed, but, like, maybe, like, Dell's second album was also the, like, poster child of the songs about whack MCs, or you could even just say, like, all the Hi-Ro guys, like, 93 Till Infinity, they were...
I mean, his song, Whack MCs.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of wore it on his sleeve. But yeah, definitely, they leaned heavy into it. If not, you know, they didn't originate it.
You know, we went from Super MCs to this song. It's like the theme so far, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I think they placed this third because it was the single. People knew it. They wanted it to hit early on the album. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But we got three keepers. We have... how much? 14 songs left? And we only have seven slots.
I'm getting stressed. All right, we're going to move on to track four, another De La produced song. The song is called Once Again, Long Island.
I want to be a super MC. So let me step up the bat, attack a hit to go beyond today's rap counterfeits. Out of the heavens, August 1769. Born I, wonder why, with the thoughts to rhyme. Till there was no longer thoughts to dream. When an unpolished demo led the limos at the age of 18. Accompanied by the screams, plug one. Shot up with fame like Novocaine, it made me numb. So numb, I wouldn't been able to feel niggas digging in my pockets for my currency reels. But still, I made girls brown eyes blue at will. Until my ass was no longer massive.
Here's my take. There can only be one song that makes it about Long Island, and this one is not it.
Interesting. So you're cutting.
I'm cutting this. It's a dope song, but it's, you know, it's a Paz solo cut, I think.
It is.
And the beat's a little too basic for me. You know, I like the chop of the Lou Donaldson drums, but a few songs later, we get a song that's one of my favorites on the album about Long Island vibes, and that, you know, I'm not going to knock out both. So this one, just it's got to go for me.
All right. Well, I'm going to swoop in and tell you that I am diametrically opposed to you on this. I love this beat. I love having a little Paz masterclass. I like having like that little like solo section for Paz. This was maybe the album where, in hindsight and going back, I will often put Paz in my top 10. Like, I just think that he is a really dope writer. And I feel you on what you're saying about the Long Island.
I love that Midas is a tiebreaker right now.
Fuck. Controversy.
Look, this is the formula.
Like, literally, it says, once again, Long Island, and Long Island Degrees comes a few songs later. And I'm like, if I have to choose one, you know, like, that's, you know. And compared to, like I said, with the other beats, like, this beat is not as good as a lot of the other beats on this album. So that's why I had to axe it.
All right, well, Midas, you have two cousins One for the cut, one for the keep. You got to come in.
I think we agreed every time on the last album, so this is
good. The Lab Cabin episode was basically an exercise in me and Steve being like, well, obviously everybody agrees with this. And Midas being like, well, it's not really.
Midas thought we were plotting against him or something. He was like,
y'all set me up on that one. So, and Steve is slick because he knew what he was doing. He was like, yo, let me jump on this quick. Let me jump on this early.
It's theater. It's dramatic. It's podcasting.
Yeah. I love it. And it's a keep for me. And if I had to keep one Long Island joint, it would be this one. I will tell you, on my cut keep list, number 9 was not making the cut. So that's a precursor to where we're going on number 9. But this is the one for me. It's what are your ears tuned to? What are your textures? And for me, this is one of my textures. You know what I'm saying? Like, this sounds like I can hear Prodigy rapping on this joint. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's got a texture to it that fits my aesthetic and the shit that you know, I'm attracted to, I think, sonically. So, yeah. And then, of course, like, I mean, to Sean's point, you know, I'm never going to get mad at Paz getting busy for a whole joint. Like, it's fucking Pasta News and shit. So I'm on a keep side.
To me, it's too similar to the intro, which is him rapping over a relatively bare beat, which is like drum heavy. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I'm like, we just did this pretty recently, you know?
That's fair. But I would also contend that there's like 5 songs that sound exactly the same that do the other opposite version of that, but the same, for, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, there's only so many different types of songs you're going to do and shit. So that's, to me, where it lands.
What's the hook on this song?
Long Island. Are you rocking the spot? Yes, I be. I don't know if it's the hook because I don't know how many times it happens.
That's like a throwback chant to like a Crocus routine, you know? It's like,
yeah,
that's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know. But you guys take it. It's yours. I'm coming after some of your other songs then.
Oh, shit.
We are house divided. We're
like
moving
maybe
on.
The next one.
Ooh, okay. Oh, shit. Track 5, it's the first song not produced by De La. This is produced by Spearhead X, and the song is called Din and It.
Sunshine be on my sidewalk when I come through. Coolie deep like family reunions. Midday May, it's all love and take a walk down in D.C. The war's tugging and ain't no drugging.
To me, it's vibey. You know what I'm saying? Then and that, like, well, I will say I'm not the biggest fan of like sound hooks. You know, that's not really my shit, but
it's not very lyrical.
But hook aside, the song fits an ill vibe. It's not a skipper for me when I'm driving and playing. If I'm driving and playing the record, it's not a skipper for me. Like, the song is dope. And this is the problem. See, I don't usually do a cut keep list ahead of time. I usually do it in the moment while we're doing this. But because the problem with doing it ahead of time is when you do a cut keep list ahead of time, you're too strategic about what you're keeping and what you're cutting. And I kind of don't believe in too strategic. Like, for instance, Steve is like, well, you only can keep one Long Island song. Like, I don't want to think like this. I just want to know, do I want to keep this record on this record?
How could you not have a strategy? The whole thing that we're doing is looking at the album as a whole. Like,
but when you add the strategy, then you take away the I want to keep this record on this record a little bit because it starts to turn political. Now you're going, but we got to keep the J. Dilla joint because Dilla did it and he didn't do anything else on it. And, you know, like, we've done this before where we'll say, like, you know, we got to keep this one because, like, on a Roots record, there was a lot of, we got to keep this one because he's on it and he's not on it again later. Fuck all that. Is the song good? Do you like the song? Do you want to keep the record because you like listening to it? That's kind of where my heart goes. But on this record, I did it ahead of time and I was mad strategic and I was like, yeah, if I got to pick, then it's this one over this one. And it kind of fucked me up a little bit. So, but no, Dinanet is a keep for me.
I'll go. Because it's not a keep for me. I love the beat. Like you said, the hook, I'm not loving the hook. Yo, hey, I know that's like another old school reference. Of all the vibey beats, this is not like this was hard to cut for me because I really love it in the flow of the album. And it's like, it's one of those head nodder feel goods. But to cut down on tracks, I had to, this one was another one that I had to get rid of. So it's kind of where I am, you know, like, I don't know. It was not super memorable to me, like some of the singles are, or I don't know. I love Big Brother Beat. You know what I mean? Like there's some records that are just like, oh, that's my shit. And this is kind of like a really good song, but in making the cut, let's see if what Sean says.
It's vibey for sure. Nobody is going to dispute the vibiness of it. This is, for me, a fucked up cut because I do enjoy this song. It's really good, but I'll say this. First of all, already acknowledged, I was stressed out having to cut 7 songs from this album, so it wasn't going to be fun. It is vibey, I would say, but borders dangerously close to a little sleepy, to be honest. And it's never a song that I want to, oh, you know what? Let me put on track 5, Din and It. It sits perfectly in the album, in that place, and it's a great vibe, but it does not make the cut because there are just straight up other songs that I think are better that do more for the album. So it's a fucked up cut because I do
it's
like
a
this
fucked
song.
Fucked up cut.
Yeah.
It's like, I like that. That's a new category.
It's like fucked getting your cuts. Haircut at an academy, like where they're teaching kid, you know, like young barbers. You get a
like
fucked
a dog
up cut.
School.
Yeah.
To me, it connects to the Super MC's vibes of beats, but it's not as good as Super MC's as a song.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
That's where I kind of do the comparing, but I agree. This was like, I was like, all right, you know, like I'm gonna have to keep other songs. So.
We didn't mention that You Don't Stop is a separate track on streaming, but it wasn't on the joint. And that just has to, just going back, that has to be noted. That shit is fire, too.
That beat is incredible.
Crazy. It's insane.
That I was like, that's like a Dilla loop that I could just listen
Yo,
to.
Yo, bro.
Like find a 60-minute version on YouTube and just keep it on in the background. Like, yep.
Yeah. It's great, and it's one of those where if it were a separate song and we were doing this exercise that we do on this album, it'd be one of those like where we'd be, oh, why didn't they just put this at the end of the previous song? And that's exactly what they did in 1996. So I was very pleased that we didn't. I was thinking we have to abide by the original pressing and not deal with
that. No, that works. I totally forgot about that joint. And when I heard it listening to this album in preparation, I actually sent Deli Digga, my producer, I sent Deli the joint and was like, I need a beat like this.
It's kind of great that they've done it this way because now it's less likely to be forgotten and you can skip to it very fast. Like it was always a practice of if you wanted to hear this, you either had to sit through the song, which was great. It's a great song to get there, or you'd have to, you know, fast forward to get there. So
it really reminds me of a Pete Rock interlude. You know, he would have those like crazy, just fade in, fade out beats. It's like, oh man, like such a good interlude.
It's so good. It's so good. So sorry, we're on a whole different song, but I just had to make sure that we acknowledge that because We had jumped over a little bit.
That's fine. But Dinning It has been kick a cut.
And those are the breaks, which segues you to the next song.
DJ Steve Wonder with the transitions. You see, he's already...
That's what I do.
Looking ahead. All right, track 6, produced by De La. The song is called Breaks. This is a fucked up cut for me because I really like this song as well. And this is another continuing in the lineage of them shouting out old school routines or old school songs with, you know, the breaks on the chorus. It's another one where like, damn, the exercise here is we're cutting to 10. I think that it doesn't really stand out enough to warrant being a standout track amongst 10. It's something that I never will skip. It's also not something that I often find myself wanting to cut directly to, like, oh man, let me put on Breaks by De La. So It's a fucked up cut.
It's a fucked up cut. I cut it too. It was less of a fucked up cut for me. This is going to be, you know, sorry for you guys that listen to Making O'Matic and look for some of our controversial takes and like, ah, man, this song, you know, some of the banter, because there's probably not that much of that because I don't hate it. It's cool. You know what I mean? It's a dope song for what it is. And, you know, thinking about some of these records, like we've said this on the pod before, but we're looking at the records on this record. Like, we're looking at the songs on this album. This would have been a cool soundtrack song. You know what I'm saying? It'd have been cool. And we would have looked at it differently if it were a standalone versus it being a record that sits in the album, maybe. But to me, it's a fucked up cut, too. I'm going to go with Sean.
And I'll add my fucked up cut as well.
If three of us cut it, is it still a fucked up cut?
Well, we feel fucked up about it, maybe. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, this was it was difficult. Yeah.
All right.
I had 5, 6, and 7 out of here, which when you said earlier that the first half of the album is strong, I was like, I don't know, because I'm getting rid of a lot of the early stuff in my cut, you know, like.
Yeah.
Those three songs to me, I'm like, eh. But these, Dinanit and Breaks, I love listening to the album, like jamming, you know, but. Placed against the other tracks, I'm just like, you know, I have to take the other ones over them.
In my list, I kept 1 through 5 right out the gate. So I was like, all right, 1 through 5 is crazy. And really what I meant to say better than the first half is better than the second half is really, to me, the middle is not that strong, is more what I would say. Because the end, the latter half is actually really good too.
Hey, you want to hear the rest of this episode? You want to see how the hell we get out of this thing and if we have helped or hurt Stakes Is High by cutting it down to 10 songs? Well, then you're going to have to join the Patreon to hear the rest. Hit the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/thequestionshiphop to get the rest of this episode right now.